Well, my address today is a brief account of the life story of Anita Murjani, as she describes it in her autobiography. She was born of Indian parents living in Singapore. Her father was in the textile business, which involved a lot of travelling, and he eventually settled down in Hong Kong when Anita was two. He was a strict Hindu and a strict father. Anita was afraid of him as a child and made sure that she never crossed him. As traditional Hindus, her parents had had an arranged marriage, and they hoped someday to set up suitable matches for Anita and her older brother Anoop when they were both of suitable age. Traditionally, a Hindu woman would be required to be subservient to her husband. Well, as a young child, Anita didn't question this, but when she was six, she was made to feel uncomfortable about gender inequality when she overheard a conversation between her mother and a friend, who this friend had two sons and no daughters. The friend had said, girls are a problem, especially when they grow up. With girls, you have to make sure they don't get spoilt, otherwise they won't get a good husband. And the amount of the dowry that's required to get a daughter married only gets higher with each passing year. And Anita overheard these remarks and was quite pained by them. Her mother consoled her about this and gave her a big hug and told her not to worry, but Anita was able to recall herself thinking, I never want to be a problem to my parents just because I'm a girl. I don't want them ever to wish I were born a boy. Her childhood upbringing was a mixture of Eastern and Western traditions. Since Hong Kong was a British colony, mainly inhabited by Chinese, Christmas and Easter were celebrated in her family with as much enthusiasm as all the Hindu festivals. Now, because of her Indian roots, Anita grew up to believe in such doctrines as karma and reincarnation. But thinking about karma as a little girl made her very anxious lest she might do anything that could possibly create negative karma in a future life. And her mind was continually processing what could be construed as good or bad karma. And she tried all the time to perfect her behaviour in accordance with her cultural beliefs. This pressure on her, self-imposed pressure really, was further confused by her education at a Catholic school. One of her classmates asked her, "How come your family doesn't go to church on Sundays?" And she replied, "Because we aren't Catholic, we're Hindu and we go to the temple on Monday evenings." "Well, you need to tell your parents to take you to church to pray to God every Sunday, otherwise you won't get to heaven when you die." Anita asked Sister Mary about this and was not given the assurance that she was looking for. Anita then started thinking, "What if God decides to come for me while I'm sleeping?" Sister Mary said that he's everywhere and knows everything. That means he will know I haven't been baptized. She was quite badly bullied at school because of her ethnic difference, but she hid this from her parents because she didn't want them to think of herself as a problem. She kept pretending that she was fitting in well and was happy. But all the time she was striving to fit in, to be accepted and liked, while at the same time feeling completely helpless with her different skin colour and racial background. And she would say to herself such things as, "Why am I always so different wherever I go? Where do I belong? Why don't I feel like I belong anywhere?" Further problems arose later when she struggled to assert her independence from her parents' traditional Indian expectations. Inwardly, she would say to herself, "But I don't want to be Indian. I want to be more like my classmates. And this difficulty reached a head later on when the question of marriage arose. Anita had dreams of travelling the world and getting a good job, but knew that agreeing to an arranged marriage would end all such hopes. At the same time, she hated disappointing people, and when she finally submitted to an arranged marriage, her inner struggle almost reached breaking point. What's wrong with me? Others do it so easily. People are getting engaged and married all the time. Why am I struggling so much with the idea? But she kept all this to herself and put on a brave front, appearing to be happy, smiling and laughing, going through all the motions of a happily engaged young woman. She couldn't bring herself to burden others with her emotional pains and fears. Well, eventually she did have the courage to break off this engagement. But psychologically this didn't help. She now felt guilt for hurting everyone, her family, her fiancé's family and her community. In fact, she started regretting everything about herself. Why am I always apologising? Why do I have to apologise for just being me? She couldn't understand what was wrong with her. Well, eventually she did marry the man of her choice, an Indian called Danny Murjani, in 1995. And they built their lives together in a quiet suburb of Hong Kong. The pressure was then on her to have children, which she didn't want. Her old fear of not measuring up rose again as she tried to resist such pressures and be true to herself. 6 years later, in 2001, her best friend, Sonny, was diagnosed with cancer. And within a few months of this, she learnt that Danny's brother-in-law had also been diagnosed with cancer. These instances instilled in Anita a deep fear because both of them were quite near her age. And she began researching everything she could about cancer and its causes. She did this to start with to help Sonny in particular, but she found that the more she read about the disease, the more she herself became afraid of everything that could potentially cause it. Pesticides, microwaves, preservatives, GM foods, sunshine, air pollution, mobile phones, so on and so forth. And this progressed until she started to fear life itself. Well, at this point, I'm going to skip over a bit about 4 years of Anita's life. And this was the period during which she herself contracted cancer. And she tried every sort of alternative therapy. She turned to different religions, prayer, meditation, in an effort to cure herself of her steadily worsening condition. But her physical decline progressed rapidly until eventually she broke out in lesions all over her body. So many toxins had invaded her system that her skin was forced to open and release the poisons within. And by the morning of February the 2nd, 2006, when she was admitted to hospital for the final time, her 4-year battle with cancer was about to end. Part 2 of the book is called My Journey to Death and Back, and it describes in detail her near-death experience, during which she received a full realization of her inherent worth, as well as the causes of her disease and a complete healing. Here are some of her words. I felt a sense of freedom and liberation that I'd never experienced in my life before, a feeling of jubilant emancipation from all the pain that my illness had caused me. What I can only describe as superb and glorious love surrounded me, wrapping me tight as I continued to let go. The term unconditional love really doesn't do justice to the feeling, as these words have been overused to the point of losing their intensity. love, joy, ecstasy, and awe poured into me, through me, and engulfed me. I was swallowed up and enveloped in more love than I ever knew existed. I felt more free and alive than I ever had. And then the father, whom she had endured such a troubled relationship with, who had died 10 years earlier, came into her presence. It brought me an unbelievable level of comfort to sense him near me. "Dad, you're here. I can't believe it." I wasn't speaking those words, I was merely thinking them. In fact, it was more like I was feeling the emotions behind the words, as there was no other way of communicating in that realm other than through the emotions. "Yes, I'm here, darling, and I've always been here, for you and our whole family," my father communicated to me. In that state of heightened awareness, without her body or any of her physical traits, she felt her pure essence continuing to exist. This essence felt far greater and more intense and expansive than her physical being. She uses the word magnificent to describe it. And as she looked at the great tapestry that was the accumulation of her life up to this point, she was able to identify exactly what had brought her to where she was today. These are her words. "Just look at my life path. Why, oh why, have I always been so harsh with myself? Why was I always beating myself up? Why did I never stand up for myself and show the world the beauty of my own soul? Why was I always suppressing my own intelligence and creativity to please others? I betrayed myself every time I said yes and meant no. Why haven't I followed my own heart and spoken my own truth?" She goes on. "I still felt myself completely enveloped in this great sea of love and acceptance. I was able to look at myself with fresh eyes and saw that I was a beautiful being of the universe. I understood that just the fact that I existed made me worthy of this tender regard rather than judgment. I didn't need to do anything specific. I deserved to be loved simply because I existed, nothing more and nothing less. The understanding was so clear. I was looking into a new paradigm of myself, becoming the crystalline light of my own awareness. I also understood that the cancer was not some punishment for anything I'd done wrong, as I had previously thought. It was as though every moment held infinite possibilities, and where I was at that point in time was a culmination of every decision, every choice, and every thought of my entire life. My many fears and my great power had manifested as this disease." Upon regaining consciousness and returning to this world, Anita found that her condition had improved so rapidly that she was able to be released from the hospital within weeks without a trace of cancer in her body. On March the 9th, 5 weeks after entering the hospital, she was able to walk unaided. Despite the doctor's total disbelief at what had taken place and their warning words to her, she knew that she was now totally cured. On March 26th, I attended a friend's wedding, and much to the shock of my friends, who knew what I'd gone through, I danced and drank champagne gleefully. I knew more than ever that life was to be lived with joy and abandon. Well, I haven't really had time to say any more, and I've probably said enough, but I'm going to end with the opening sentence of her final chapter, which is entitled "Allowing and Being Yourself." I know I've said it before, but it bears repeating. I now live my life from joy instead of fear. This is the one simple difference between who I was before that experience and who I am today. Before, without realizing it, everything I did was to avoid pain or to please other people. I was caught up in doing, pursuing, searching, and achieving. And I was the last person I ever took into consideration. Since my experience, I don't feel that I came back to accomplish anything. I only came back to be. Because of this, everything I do comes from love. I don't worry any more about trying to get things right or complying with rules or doctrines. I just follow my heart and know that I can't go wrong when I do so. Ironically, I end up pleasing more people than my old self ever did. And this has a big impact on my health as well. Since I now see myself as an infinite being, the physical takes care of itself because it's only a reflection of what's going on in my soul. Remind everyone close to you to be themselves and tell them that you love them just the way they are. They're perfect, and so are you. There's nothing not to love. Most suffering stems from feeling less than. You aren't less than anything or anyone. You are complete.